Mr. Gerard, thank you very much for joining Press TV. The most important question today as we speak is Syria and the situation over there. And I'd like to get your expert opinion. Do you think there's going to be a war in Syria anytime soon?
Well, first of all, I would say that there is a war going on in Syria. But I guess that you mean some kind of international war in the sense that a number of countries, not only Western countries, because we have heard about the declaration of Turkey, which has declared that it would join a coalition of the will in the case of an action of other powers, if there are significant clues that the present government of President Assad is responsible for chemical attacks. So, yes, there is a risk, and a serious one. But I must say that if I compare 4 days ago and now, I would say that 4 days ago we were on the brink of immediate military action. And now a number of countries have declared that maybe they will not join at present and will take time to consider the results of the mission by the UN in Syria. And I found that today people are, and even government, are more cautious than they were 4 days ago. Having said that, unfortunately, several governments, particularly the Obama administration, have declared publicly we have strong evidence. We have intercepted radio communication in the Syrian army, and we can prove that they have used chemical weapons. So they have put themselves in a position where it becomes extremely difficult to set back and say, well, we have new elements, and maybe the question is too difficult, and we will see later. It's particularly difficult for a country like the United States when it goes too far ahead to get back. So we are also right now in a with a problem of saving face, and I don't know, frankly, how the how President Obama will be able to deal with that.
So you think because America said we have no doubt that the Assad regime used chemical weapons, you think because they said that, they're going to enter into a war in Syria?
I say that it will be very, very difficult to do nothing and implicitly say we were wrong, or more serious than that, we have presented to the world allege clues, which in fact were not clues. That's pretty
much. Do you
think
there is going to be a surgical operation if there is going to be a war, or it's going to be an all-out military intervention?
No, it's clear that it will not be an all-out military intervention. I mean, say that we need to be very careful with the expression surgical strikes, because if it is, let's say, 1, 2, 3 strikes, well, it can be surgical. If, like they did in Libya, the Americans decide to launch something like, for instance, 200 Tomahawk missiles, it's a huge, massive, destructive attack, and you will see, obviously, important so-called collateral damages.
If those Tomahawk cruise missiles hit Bashar Assad's chemical arsenal, what's going to happen? Is that going to destroy it, or is that going to create an environmental and humanitarian catastrophe in the region?
Well, I think that the Americans are not that fool, in the sense that they can destroy conventional ammunition depot. They can also strike, which is, if I may say, without entering into technical details, but it will be very much easier to destroy center for command and control of operation, because those centers launch electronic waves which are intercepted and which can be translated to the program of the Tomahawk missiles, and you can destroy that, and it has no impact, of course, on the environment. Targeting and destroying chemical plant with the risk of spreading agent all over the area would be absolutely foolish. And I doubt that any president would approve such target, because, as you know, the tradition in the United States, the military presents the president with a list of targets, options, and the president selects the targets.
So do you think it's important for the United States to see whether more civilian casualties will be caused by these so-called surgical operations?
No, yes, it's a problem of legitimacy, problem of credibility, a problem of also, there is a risk of diplomatic isolation in that case. And I don't think that they at present, the Obama administration will run that risk, and because it would have serious consequences, not only in Syria, not only for the civilian population, but it will impact on the whole region. It will impact on the public opinion in all the Arab countries all around. And as we all know, those countries are facing very serious difficulties, social unrest, political unrest, and this would exacerbate the feeling that in the end that the United States have created a total mess in the region.
So you don't think America will attack chemical weapons arsenal in Syria because it wants to limit the risk of a greater disaster?
Yes.
One more thing about these chemical weapons. When I was I was going to elementary school, I remember those days when Saddam Hussein attacked Iran with chemical weapons. And it was kind of, wow, you know, Iranians were shocked. They were in shock and disbelief. Up until this moment, there are people who are still suffering. Those chemical agents were supplied by the Western countries, and Saddam Hussein just put them together and used them against Iran, as well as the Kurdish population of Iran. So by today's definition, that if any country uses chemical weapons, it's supposed to be punished. Do you think those governments, Western governments, that supplied Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons need to be punished?
Well, it's a legal problem. One of the positive aspects of the use of chemical weapons in the case that you have mentioned is that it has accelerated the pace of the Chemical Weapons Convention, and it has increased the number of states which agreed not only to sign but also to ratify the convention. Now we have a system of verification, which is quite a good one, which is by far not a perfect one, since, of course, not all the countries have signed in or ratified. Nonetheless, I think that the more, unfortunately, I must say, the more chemical weapons are used, the more the legislation will become stringent in order to avoid that. And I think that the number of countries which remain out that kind of regime, out completely outlaw, will diminish. Unfortunately, we cannot preclude the acquisition or the fabrication of chemical weapons, which have not necessary to be very sophisticated.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to make a distinction between rather crude chemical weapons, which cannot make a lot of damage against unprotected civilian population taken by surprise, and the other category of chemical weapons, which are dedicated to pure military use, particularly against units which have some protection but not sophisticated protection against sophisticated nervous agent. So those weapons become weapons of what we call chemical battlefield. But it's not necessary to have those weapons in order to create a lot of damage and a lot of terror among civilian population.
Yeah, but Saddam Hussein used those weapons against Iran in the most military way. You know,
yeah.
It just used the sophisticated bombs against the Iranian population, against the Kurdish population of Iraq as well. And it killed, those bombs killed thousands of people, and still, as we speak, thousands more are still suffering from the aftermath of those attacks. Do you think Western governments that supplied Saddam Hussein with those weapons or those agents that turned into weapons with the help of the Western countries, do you think they need to be held accountable for what they did based on today's definition of how bad chemical weapons are?
You raised the issue of the legal retroaction. Most of the country in...
I'm sorry, may I come in? It's not talking about a retroactive response. This is something that was signed 1929.
Yes, if you
so
back...
all these countries signed that convention. We're not talking about a retroactive thing. We're talking about something that was already in place when Saddam Hussein attacked Iran.
So, in that case, if you declare that those countries which used or which provide such weapons should be recognized accountable according to the provision of 1927, yes, you're right.
So, you think those countries will have to be held accountable for what they did, supplying Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons?
Those countries... which have been, or those entities, it can be not necessarily a state, but it can be a city, it can be a community of people, can enter into law prosecution.
So why do you think it has not happened yet? Do you think it was Iran's fault that didn't pursue the matter, or it was like a lack of will on the part of the international community that they did not really pursue that matter? Like right now, we see a lot of efforts on the part of the Western governments to punish those responsible. The U.S. says it is the Assad regime. Some others say, like Russia said, we don't know who did that.
Mm.
Maybe the insurgents did that. Maybe some rogue elements within the Assad regime did that. So we don't know who did that, but everyone has reached a consensus. Those who did that would have to be punished. But why do you think those states or those entities or companies or all those individuals who supplied Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons, who used them against the Iranian people, against the Kurdish population. Why do you think it has never reached anywhere? No one has investigated that. It has not become a major international issue.
Well, there are many elements related to that. First of all, in several countries in the West that you have mentioned, those companies which have provided the devices to build those weapons have been obliged to stop their activities, and some of them have been prosecuted by their own government. It has been the case in Germany, for instance. And a number of countries has decided to calm down the issue, settle the matter, say, well, we have taken new measure in order to avoid to have new events of that kind, to reproduce that kind of situation. And later on, it is also true that the issue of chemical weapons focused mostly on Iraq, that in the case of Iraq after the war of 1991, a number of UN missions have visited the sites and have destroyed tons and tons of chemical weapons. And to a number of countries, particularly in the West, but not necessarily in the United States, there has been a feeling that the whole issue had been settled, and that basically it will never happen again. On the contrary, the Bush administration later on made the case that, well, as you know, Saddam Hussein was pursuing again and again dangerous chemical programs, which has been documented by the United Nations once again in 2002, and at that time they found absolutely nothing, because there was absolutely nothing. And so,
so you think it was
nonetheless,
a false flag operation in Iraq?
Yes.
Would you call it a false flag operation?
Absolutely.
Do you think the same false flag operation is happening in Syria right now as we speak?
I don't know. I'm just waiting, as all the reasonable person, I'm waiting for the full result of the UN mission. Because, as I mentioned several times, because that mission has had an access 5 days after the use of those agents for good experts, and they are good experts, it will be absolutely obvious, because very easy, from the samples, from the all the elements they will gather, because those elements will be still partly active, not fully active, but partly active. So you can immediately, within the span of 24 hours, say, we know what kind of agent has been used, because they have arrived on the site very, very quickly. It's very different from a mission which arrived 6 months later, where it has been possible to, well, the agents have evaporated, the samples have not the same quality, and so on and so forth. Now we have something really serious which can be proved, and depending of the nature of the agent, depending of the, on the way it has been used, it will be clear who is really behind
Let's imagine that Bashar Assad has used chemical weapons against those people. Let's imagine that thing is proved. Do you think it's a good idea for France to get involved in the war, if there is going to be a war?
Well, if we, well, it's very hypothetical. I think that if it is proved that, with no doubt, that such weapons have been used by Assad regime, probably the most difficult time will be for those who have supported him, because they will understand that they have been fooled. it will be extremely difficult for Russia to understand why, at the same time, Assad has denied constantly that it would use chemical weapons and behind their back has used nuclear weapons, chemical weapons. In that sense, I think that it would require Russia to reconsider its political position and its support to Assad. When it comes to the Western country, again, the main concern is to say we will punish, but what punish means exactly, because at the same time we have heard we will punish Assad, but we will not try to engage fully in order to get rid of him, in order to trigger a regime change, that kind of stuff. So it seems to me that in both cases, the political goals for justifying the use of military force are not clear, because punish for the sake of punishment doesn't make sense. Because once you have used military force, what will happen? You are entering clearly in a very murky environment where the Assad regime can retaliate, where other country can consider that it's a situation of war and take another step of support to Assad. If the decision seems illegitimate, for instance, to Russia, the Russian government will reconsider also its military assistance to Syria. And that means we will enter in an uncertain process of very dangerous escalation.
There are three countries in Europe which are considered the most important ones, France, Germany, and the UK. That sentiment on the UK and the German part wasn't echoed in Paris. Yesterday, Mr. François Hollande said that there's going to be something by Wednesday. There might be a war by Wednesday. At the same time, you see in the UK, the parliament said, no, we're not going to get engaged in a war. In Germany, they said, we're not going to join a war. But France, once again, the previous time, it was Nicolas Sarkozy, and now we have François Hollande. When François Hollande came to power, a lot of people said there's going to be a break between his stance and the one that was taken by Nicolas Sarkozy. We went to the Mali situation. We saw that over there, France engaged in a military action. Is there any difference between the military or the warmongering kind of policies of François Hollande and Nicolas Sarkozy?
Well, in several areas, yes, there is a difference. But when it comes to the Middle East, we see indeed very little change. Probably with the small exception of the policy towards Palestine, where France has significantly departed from the strong support to Israel by Sarkozy. But with that exception, I would say that in the case of the Middle East, in the case of the policy towards Iran and the policy of sanctions, we see very, very little difference. In the case of Syria, well, there has been very little change, because since the beginning we have seen a very tough position of French diplomacy, which considered that a military action was necessary. And they think that now, with that use of chemical weapons, they have a strong argument to justify a military action. In that sense, I would say that France and French administration has probably a much more tougher position than, of course, the Germans and the UK. Having said that, 4 days ago, the French government was basically saying that the retaliation or the punishment was immediate. Now, the position is much more cautious, and which is to say we need to wait for the UN mission results. We will have a proposal of resolution for the UN Security Council. But if we think that the Assad regime is responsible, it has to be punished. And we will join an American operation to do so.
Do you think that the French people will support that? If worse comes to worse, then they're going to attack Syria?
Well, so far, all the polls are relatively clear in the sense that no. And there is a very if we take three cases, if we take Libya, the French public opinion was very, very uncertain about was it good, was it bad, was it legitimate or not. Ultimately, they found that if it's a quick war, maybe it could be acceptable. So there has been a debate which demonstrate that the public opinion and the French politician were, in a, let's say, 50-50% position. In the case of Mali, by contrast, almost, and maybe most of the public opinion was supporting the operation. In the case of Syria, today it is clear that the French public is in majority opposed to any military action, because they are uncertain about who is responsible, because also they are very defiant about the nature of the Syrian Army for Freedom. They know quite well that there are a lot of dangerous people in there, and they fear that a new instability will benefit to those elements which are now threatening Libya, which remain some threats also in the neighborhood of Mali. And so I think that for most of them, they consider that we need to be very cautious and not to engage without precaution in any kind of military action.
Yeah, quite clear. I just want ask one more question about this whole Syria scenario. When I've been covering stories in the region for the past 17 years, my friend was killed in Afghanistan by the Taliban. And I can clearly remember those days when the Taliban was in power. Another friend of mine was killed in Syria by exactly the same people, you know, the ideology was the same. So in Afghanistan, the U.S. went to the country, invaded the country, and tried to drive out all those militants that it's now supporting in Syria. And in Libya as well, we had correspondents in Libya. I was in contact with them on a daily basis. I can clearly tell that exactly the same people, the same Taliban, Al-Qaeda ideology, which was reigning in Afghanistan one day, then it was created in Libya, it was created in Syria. But these three countries, you can see the same people fighting, but they are viewed differently by the West. For instance, in Afghanistan, they fight them. In Syria, they support them. In Libya, they're quite divided. What's going on? Do you believe that these are the same people, same ideology, same misguided individuals? If it is so, why is it that we see this hypocrisy on the part of the Western countries?
I think most of the time, the main cause is the short view and the very narrow vision of the future and of the midterm and even more long term of the situation. And that means, well, we have a problem because the Soviet Union invasion of Afghanistan, so we give sophisticated weapons to jihadists. And then later on we have problems with the instability in Afghanistan. And finally we find that, you know, I remember I was at that time in the United States and in the press and even in the Clinton administration, they were saying, well, you know, those students in Afghanistan are not that bad. They want a new government.
The Taliban, they refer to the Taliban as students.
Yeah, they were not saying Taliban.
Yeah.
They were saying those students, you know, and portrayed them just as, you know, American students in their university. They were students.
Yeah.
And if they had taken a gun, well, it's because it was necessary to clean the mess in the country. So, the support to the Taliban led to what we have experienced later. And finally, we discovered that those Talibans were dangerous and were capable to get in touch with even more dangerous jihadists coming from other countries. It might be Al-Qaeda, it might be different groups. But at the same time, the response was very short-sighted. We come, we destroy, we leave, and if necessary, we support in some different government until it becomes unpleasant, and then we help the change. And there is no vision, no long-term vision. Where the vision of the stability of Afghanistan, the stability of Pakistan, if you look exactly the same way to the policy towards Pakistan, it has changed almost every 3 years, depending on the French policy, the American policy, and the policy of the countries which had some interests in the region. So my answer is too much short-term vision, no vision of the danger of the future, and it explains that probably why there will be a decision to use force in Syria without any idea of the consequences. Not only for Russia, for Syria and for the Syrian people, but also for the whole environment in the region.
So you believe that those insurgents inside Syria, if they come to power, if the Assad regime is toppled by military force, if they come to power, those insurgents, they can again create more problems like what they did in Afghanistan, what they did in other parts of the world?
There is a tremendous risk. No one can predict the evolution of such a situation. It's so volatile, it's so dangerous. But it is clear that at present, those elements which could be capable of toppling by force Saddam Hussein will continue to use force in order to transform Syria, or maybe which could become a new terrorist safe haven. And it's not a pleasant future.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. One question that's always in my mind, I just wanted to ask you this question. Why do you think Al-Qaeda has never attacked Israel? Because Israel is Muslim's top enemy and Al-Qaeda is is an Islamic organization. Why do you think Al-Qaeda has never attacked Israel? It's very, very interesting. We don't know why do you think it's happening?
Frankly speaking, I've never tried to study seriously the problem, if there is any problem. I think that to do that, it would have been necessary to create a very, very competent organization, very good network, and probably I don't doubt about the intention, but I doubt about the capabilities. And it seems to me that
I'm not talking about attacking Israel per se. I'm talking about attacking Israeli interests, for instance, Israeli missions.
Well, we have several examples of attempts to attack or bomb Israelis' embassies.
They were always blamed on Hezbollah or on Iran.
Not only on Hezbollah, but also on groups affiliated, for instance, in the Southeast Asia, groups more or less affiliated to Al-Qaeda.
But you agree with me? There's not been anything like Al-Qaeda being involved in any of those attacks. No, that picture over there, this is the picture. This is the person, the janitor of Twin Towers. He took this picture. He was here in my office, sitting on that chair. The last person who left the Twin Towers before they fell down.
Yeah.
He had all the keys. He was the person in charge. He signed it for me. I didn't ask for this. He just wanted to give it to me himself. Al-Qaeda attacked the United States, as they said. They said that we've attacked the United States. We've brought down Twin Towers, killed thousands of people. Still,